They want me to get rid of my dog. Can they do that?
I'm being fined for leaving my garage door open too long.
What are covenants? Do I have any rights?
Help, I feel like I've left the American zone.
If you want the answers to those questions, join me, Shu Bartholomew, and my guests on The Commons every Saturday from 2 to 3 right here on WEBR Fairfax Radio. We'll ask the experts and we'll untangle the truth about what's left of our property rights.
On the Commons is a weekly radio show dedicated to discussing the many issues surrounding mandatory membership homeowners associations. Join us as we explore this relatively new world of controlled living, which includes condominiums, cooperatives, and both attached and detached single-family homes. Living in a common ownership development means giving up the American dream. It means giving up your constitutional rights and control over your most valuable asset, your home. Living in a homeowners association means leaving the American zone. This is On the Commons, and I am Shu Bartholomew, Radio Fairfax. And joining us today is Ward Lucas. Ward is a long-time investigative reporter, an award-winning TV anchor, and he's written a book called Neighbors at War, and he has a blog that just seems to grow by the second, because he just told me he was getting a ton of emails. Ward, thank you so much. We've been trying to get you on for a while, and I'm glad that we're finally here. We're finally doing it.
Thank you, too. I appreciate it. I do appreciate the work that you're doing in bringing people around the country together and letting them know that there are other folks out there who are or have been through the same problems they have, and giving them advice as to how to deal with their problems.
Well, the problems that we're getting, it's just ridiculous. The problems are just insane. No rational society should go through this.
Well, who said we're a rational society?
Who said? I don't know. I'm beginning to question that.
I think I am too.
Yeah, I'm really beginning to question that. So you were telling me before we got on the air that you just got 500 emails?
Oh, yeah. I get quite a number of emails a day. And if I'm away from the computer for a day or two, it's mind-boggling trying to catch up. And for a lot of the people who write me regularly, I am sorry, I apologize if I don't get back to you quickly or if I reply with only one or two words, but just understand that I get inundated, and I appreciate the people who are writing, but boy, we were getting some crazy stories. I did a story about a sassy story about an HOA in Honolulu that was having problems with an embezzler who managed several communities in Oahu. And I got several emails back from HOA board members in Hawaii saying, can we provide a direct link to your Neighbors at War blog on our HOA newspaper? And I thought, sure, the more readers, the better.
Absolutely.
But Hawaii is just being hammered by some of these crooked managers. And, of course, remember a year or two ago, the organized crime lawsuit, where a couple who had been psychologically beaten up for a lengthy period of time by an HOA manager won a huge damage dispute against these two people. We think, great, you know, it's about time some of the victims began winning. The only problem is the 200 people in that HOA are now going to have to come up with the money to pay the $2 or $4 million that this couple won against the HOA managers.
Oh, yeah. So, I mean, that's so typical, because people think, oh, you know, it's carefree living and someone else is going to take care of the grass and all of that. But what you guys don't know and don't realize is that the flip side to that is that you've got some who knows who's going to end up on the board making decisions that's going to affect you. You can live very frugally and very carefully and try very hard not to get into trouble. But if somebody does something on the board and the whole association is sued, guess what? They're coming after you, and you may lose your home.
Well, that was the case in Hawaii in this organized crime lawsuit. I don't even think the two managers that were perpetrating all the abuse were board members. But just the fact that the board had hired them made the board the deep pockets, which this couple's lawyer could go after. And obviously, it's wrecked, completely wrecked an entire apartment building, a condo building in a gorgeous part of the country, because those homeowners now have to come up with a special assessment for $20,000 or $30,000 or $50,000 to help pay for this massive judgment. That means more people in that condo development are going to be going broke because they can't afford the special assessment. And as they go broke, other condo owners have to come up with the extra money to pay for the dues for all the people who bailed out of the condo. And you've got a homeowner or a homeowners association in financial collapse. And that's what's going on, and people don't get it when they buy into these things.
I think what people don't understand and is that what you're hearing, the stories that we're hearing, is simply the tip of the iceberg, because I'm sure that you hear from people who will tell you stories, who will tell you what's going on in their lives and tell you what's happening in their neighborhoods, but they don't want you to write about it. They're terrified. They're absolutely terrified to let everybody know about it. I mean, some of the worst cases that I've heard come from states that you wouldn't necessarily automatically think would be on the top of the HOA problem. But the people there were just too terrified of allowing me to tell their story, of coming on and talking about their stories.
I've got a funny story along that line. I was interviewed in here in Seattle by a Denver radio talk show host who's quite well known. And as I always do, my initial conversation with him was in his home. He lives in a very nice HOA in a very nice part of Denver, very well managed. But as I drove in, his house was maybe about 10 blocks into the HOA. As I drove in, I kept writing on my pad various violations that I saw in his neighborhood. Unwrapped hoses, or the wrong color of hoses, or a flagpole, or Christmas decorations that were still up. And I got to his house, and I said, Steve, this is before we even had a significant discussion about HOAs. I said, from the entrance to your house, I counted over 100 potential HOA violations, things that have been tagged by other HOAs across the country as a reason for fines and liens. And he said, 100. And I said, and yes, on your house alone, I counted 20. I sat out on the curb and I saw the hose on the lawn and the air conditioner without the cover on it and some Christmas lights still up, a nail for a Christmas ornament still nailed into his front door. All of those have been targets of other HOAs across the country. He hadn't been targeted. And his HOA was a little more mild, although he said, no, they've done some things to upset me. But the fact that we had 120 violations that people could potentially have been hit with in what's very nice, upscale neighborhood housing, that's bizarre.
You know, the types of things that you mentioned and the types of things that people lose their homes over is just so absolutely absurd. It's absolutely crazy.
It's out of control. It's beyond crazy.
It is. It is out of control. It really and truly is. And you know who I blame for that? Our legislators.
Well, you've got to, if you're going to blame the legislators, you have to give them some credit for being halfway intelligent. I'm not sure I'll go that far.
Okay. You're right. I told one of our state senators, I said, you and CAI have made a complete and total mockery of hearth and home. And he agreed with me, and I did this in an open meeting.
Yeah.
And he agreed with me.
Well, that's one thing we have to tackle, is the various representative organizations like CAI and NCI and there are others. Because they go into the legislature, and legislators have a massive amount of work that they have to do. They don't read any of the bills they pass. We talked about the fact that Congress never read Obamacare before passing it. Well, they never read anything before passing it. They are so busy, they depend upon lobbyists. Tell me what this bill says. Tell me what the implications are. And if they believe the lobbyist, they change their vote and vote according to what the lobbyist is telling them. And it's works more times than not, but it's also a system that's way open to abuse by organizations that are as deceitful as the CAI. They come in and they say, we represent homeowners in homeowners associations. False. They do not. They represent attorneys who file tort cases. They represent managers who take kickbacks or give kickbacks to board members that give them the contracts to mow the front lawn. They don't represent homeowners. But every legislator you talk to about the CAI, unless they've been on my website or on yours, will say, oh, no, I think the CAI represents all homeowners. They believe that.
They know that because, listen, homeowners go out there. And first of all, understand what you're doing, because we have a couple of homeowners who've got organizations and groups, and really what they're advocating is more stuff to make CAI wealthy, rich, and all of that. And one of them is in Colorado. Some of the stuff that they're doing, they haven't got a clue. They really don't know what they're doing.
Are you talking transfer fees?
I'm not talking. Transfer fees are fine. I'm talking about binding arbitration.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm.
That's just putting people in a box, locking it up, and throwing away the key. That's insane. That shouldn't be allowed. I mean, CAI is all for that.
At the same time, it's also insane to say to a homeowner, we have no binding arbitration here. We're going to go full press to court, and your attorney's fees for this little fine about the wrong color hose on the side of the house is going to cost you about $500,000 in legal fees. There is no justice if you have to pay for justice.
You know,
our system is broken. We've so far walked away from any system of legal reasonability or financial reasonability under the law. You go broke if you try to assert a right.
You know, And that's where I think our legislators have really dropped the ball, because there is such a thing in the Constitution that says you're going to have a separation of powers. And when you go to arbitration, there is really very little separation of powers, because what happens is the association picks an arbitrator, the homeowner picks an arbitrator. But guess what? The homeowner is going to be there once. The arbitrator is going to get paid, and he's going to make sure, because the potential repeat client is going to be the HOA, not the homeowner.
Of course.
So he's going to make sure that he gets more business. So he's going to find for the HOA, because the HOA is going to remember that, and they're going to come back again, and they're going to pick him or her.
Extending even further, all of the people on our network, and I'm sure you're the first who's received this, one of the good people who sends us, keeps us abreast of what goes on in Pennsylvania, has sent me something that I'm probably going to post tomorrow night or the next on judges, corrupt judges in her state. And when you get attorneys and judges who are involved in the massive scams that have been uncovered in Pennsylvania, the child porno scams, the Jerry Sandusky type stuff, and you realize that these judges in sending around porno emails are exchanging them with the same people who are going to be on the dock representing homeowners,
yeah. Oh,
or
yeah.
Corporations or whoever. You're not going to get justice from that judge. You're going to get that judge siding with his little porn buddy who happens to be the attorney in front of the bench at the time. That's wrong. Our judicial system is so screwed up.
Oh, I so totally agree with you. I so completely agree with you, Ward. The system is screwed up, and there have been, over the years, there have been a lot of organizations that have come up, like a lot of the HOA organizations, that have been dealing with corrupt judges. Julie Alexander, for instance, in Nevada, was part of, she's moved out of the country now, but Julie educated me years and years and years ago of what was going on with the court system and with the judges, and she was a part of a group of people who had started an organization
dealing with corrupt judges. So, yeah, it's not new. I mean, this has been going on for a hell of a long time. You're right.
I suppose it was since constitutional days, but at the same time, there was a higher moral spirit in the early days of our republic. There was more conscientious effort to uphold the rule of law, even at the extent of the social damage you could do yourself. Now it seems like there are no morals in the legal world. It's all about rules and how we can play the rules, turn them into a game of chess, not in administering justice, but in winning money for our side. It's all money. It's not about justice.
Well, there's so much corruption, and people get away with it, and nobody... There's, you know what I found is there's very little pride and very little dignity in this country. Somebody with pride and dignity would never, ever risk being caught doing some of the stuff that we read and hear about all the time.
You know, I grew up in a military family. My father was a lieutenant colonel in the Army, and from birth we were taught, do the right thing, even at the expense of your reputation, do the right thing. And my two brothers, who are attorneys, and me as a would-be newsman, somebody who just slipped into the occupation, the three of us, I think, have always lived on that military background. That, you know, sometimes you hurt yourself by doing the right thing, but at the same time, if you don't do the right thing, you've got to live with that. It's going to be in your mind and in your heart, and your heart is black if you have stepped over the line and hurt somebody just because you were in a position to do so.
You know, lying, one of the most basic things. I would be absolutely mortified if I was caught in a lie. And I don't tell lies. People who lie are generally caught.
Well, you know, I see lying in courtrooms all the time, whether it's, if my phone goes dead, I'm going to have to pick up another one. I just got a couple of beeps. The battery is low, but I've been in courts for hundreds and hundreds of trials over the decades, for 40 years. I was a court reporter, sometimes court reporter, and I saw the district attorneys lie or fudge the facts.
Yeah.
I saw the defense attorneys out and out falsify the facts.
Yeah.
One of my first books that I read that really got me interested in the law was F. Lee Bailey's The Defense Never Rests, and I thought, wow, this guy is something else. I want to be a lawyer. And I read deeper and deeper into his book, and one of his lines in there is that he has never defended a guilty man, ever. Well, you know, he's a criminal defense attorney. He's defended lots of guilty people.
Yeah.
But he twists the words and says,
yes,
if the guy is guilty, I have him plead guilty. If he's not, I give him what the Constitution is, and that is the best possible defense. I'll turn that around and look at it another way. He's going to lie. Yes, the Constitution demands that he get the best possible defense in court, the defendant. But at the same time, why construct a complete lie in order to defend your client, to give him the best possible defense? If the best possible defense is an out-and-out lie, fabrication by the attorney, something's fundamentally wrong with the system.
But, you know, it's When I was a kid growing up, we were punished if we were caught in a lie.
Oh, yeah.
And now when people lie and I point out that it's a lie, but wait a minute, didn't you just say, you know, they don't, yeah. There's no shame.
That's right. There's
no... You know, there's no dignity, there's no shame, there's no pride.
That's right.
Okay, we were talking about lying.
And I had a story to tell you about that.
Yes.
When I was growing up, of course I told you about my military parents, a lie is something that was always connected to what we call the Sam Brown belt. I don't know if you know what a Sam Brown belt is, but...
No, I don't. Do you want to tell us?
It's a very thick, probably a 4-inch thick belt that was worn for military maneuvers. It had a, as I recall, it had a strap that went over the shoulder that attached the front and the back, and then there was just this normal belt, which was 4 inches wide, is, you know, big enough to go around the belly of an Army officer. And it was, I believe it had brads on it, and it was a threatening sort of thing to hold over our heads for lying. But we were told by my mother, if I lied, my father, who was an Army pilot, or an Army Air Corps pilot, if I lied, he always got the Sam Brown belt. And she said, I am going to use the Sam Brown belt that was used on me if I ever catch you lying. Well, I never saw the Sam Brown belt in all those years. I had lots of threats, but it was always, go get the Sam Brown.
Go get the Sam Brown, huh?
But, no, and those were the days when corporal punishment was okay. Now, believe me, in my childhood, I never got corporal punishment. My parents never administered it, but the threat was always there. These days, you can't even use that kind of a threat against kids. It's illegal. But I think we ought to be able to use that kind of a threat of corporal punishment against lying lawyers.
I like that idea. I really
do. Why not
just
make them bend over the rail and let the victims wail on the guy?
So let's go back to...
Okay, I'm just being a little silly there.
I think you're right. But the one thing that does concern me a whole lot, Ward, mm-hmm. is the fact that we have... I mean, there seems to be this notion, especially by some homeowners, that if we had binding arbitration, that it would be cheaper, it would be easier, you know, everything would be great. If you want to avoid paying for protecting your rights, roll over and do anything the HOA wants you to do.
Right.
You're either going to protect your right or you're not going to protect it. By putting you in a situation where you're binding arbitration, which puts you in another contractual agreement, you are stuck with whatever the arbitrator decides. Now, the arbitrator, as I mentioned earlier, is going to be able to pick and choose his clients or, you know, is going to be catering to the person who's going to bringing him the most...
Sure.
The most business.
Now, I personally have been through binding arbitration twice, not involving an HOA matter, and it was a little different here. We were each represented by an attorney.
Yes.
And the... we would have to leave the room after explaining ourselves to the arbitrator. The other side got a chance to explain their side. We would move back and forth in front of the arbitrator. And what he did was basically negotiated a settlement for us. But it wasn't a binding amount. But if we decided we didn't like what the amount of money that was eventually going to be paid, either side, we could say, okay, we're now going to move into district court. You know, the arbitration didn't work. We're going to go to district court. So our rights were always protected. But it gave each side a chance to lower the attorney's fees, lower the potential judgment. And in both cases, it worked. I don't know if it worked in my favor, but it worked a heck of a lot more cheaply than actually having to go to district court and have a full-blown trial. But it was optional. It wasn't mandatory arbitration.
So it sounds like there was a negotiation involved.
Yes, in both cases where I was involved.
Okay. Now, let's take... You wrote a book called Neighbors at War, and one of the pictures, and I don't have your book with me, but one of the pictures in there, it's just never left my mind, is when the association next door came and put a fence right down the middle of your road.
100 yards of fence, yes.
100 yards of fence, okay?
Illegally.
It's your road.
Mm-hmm.
You need to be able to go on your road to access your property, right?
Well, they essentially prohibited us from having any access to fire trucks, aid cars. We were in a position of some danger during the time that fence was up.
Right. So let's say that you go into arbitration.
Mm-hmm.
You have a right here. It's not a negotiation. It's not, well, if we move it to a little bit over to the side, would that be okay? The fact is that it's your road. It is your right. They do not have the right, the authority, or anything else to build a fence on your property. You need to be able to protect that. It's not an not a situation of negotiations.
Well, this is something that, decent neighbors could have gone to lunch and discussed.
Right.
We're the bottom line was my road strayed over the section line by, they didn't know whether it was 2 feet or 11 feet. So the road did violate the section line, but the road was built precisely where the road was in 1859. In other words, that road had always been there. It was only when I started trying to use it that they threw up that fence.
That they threw up the fence.
And in court, we, in fact, I went down because of the safety hazard, and I personally tore out the 100 yards of fencing. The HOA sued. We ended up going to court. We were never offered binding arbitration or arbitration of any kind, but the HOA was told to keep their fence off my road.
Yes, because it was your right.
Right, but it cost me $150,000 to get that far.
And the HOA should have paid you for that.
They should have.
And in
but we weren't awarded that. We at that point, I don't think we even asked for it. But
well, there's the thing, because in Virginia we have something that says the prevailing party to a suit is entitled to fees and costs.
Right, but what the judge can do.
The judge, but you have to ask for it.
Right, but what the judge can do that basically prohibits you from getting such a judgment is he says the fence doesn't have to go back in the original position in the grass. It can go 1 inch this side of the grass. So the other side says, we won, and in fact they went in their newsletter and they said, we won. It was an out-and-out lie. They didn't win. I won the fence being removed from my road, but the judge moved the fence over an inch to benefit the HOA. Therefore, each side theoretically won something. Therefore, we couldn't ask for damages.
Well, I don't know the details. If you had gone to an arbitrator does not have to know the law.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of the big problems. So if you're dealing with rights, you know, what you could have done was gone to mediation, where you had a mediator decide all of that. But arbitration kicks it up a step.
Mm-hmm.
And if you want to mediate and if you want to negotiate your rights, that's fine. But if you change your mind, you want to be able to go to court. Binding arbitration closes that door.
Mm-hmm.
It prevents you from doing that.
Right.
So if the judge in your case had said, you know what? That's their property line. Sorry, Mr. Ward, why don't you build another driveway over?
Of course, we couldn't do that in our case because we had litigated the other side of the road. He had tried to push us one way. My HOA then tried to push the other way. So I was in the middle of two different lawsuits.
So you were stuck between a rock and a hard place, huh?
A rock and a hard place and a very deep ravine.
A very deep ravine. A lot of the homeowners, here's something interesting. The homeowners I know who have been to court in Virginia and who have asked for fees and costs have been awarded every single penny they asked for
mm-hmm.
when they won. I had a CAI attorney in here one day who thinks that maybe it shouldn't be for both. It shouldn't be the prevailing party, but if the HOA wins, the homeowner has to pay the HOA's fees. And if the homeowner wins, then the homeowner, well, wins, and they're stuck with their own fees. They have to pay their own fees. So we argued about that. We said, well, you know, if you advise your clients properly and you go to court and you win, then you will be awarded costs and fees. She says to me, yeah, but you know what? The judge never awards us everything we want. So my guess is that their fees are not reasonable. You know, they just try to gouge the homeowner. And ultimately, the big prize is the house. Get them out, get their house,
sure.
Move them out of here.
Well, something's wrong with the system. You know,
it is.
Emotionally, you can't say, I appreciate this homeowner so much on the fact that they really want to live in this home. Their violation is so minor, we're going to overlook the violation and just ask the homeowner, in, you know, without threatening lawyers and lawsuits, please keep your car off the grass on the driveway. You know, it's why go to court over something as stupid as that?
But why look for stuff?
Well, because you've got these bully boards that think that that's what they're supposed to do.
Why look for stuff?
Yeah.
I remember when I was on the board here. I had come on the board and we'd had an issue with one of the homeowners who had left some old appliances on his property. And so they went on the property and they inspected and they measured and they took pictures and they jumped around and they did the toilet brush dance, everything that they wanted to do. And they ended up getting, and I don't remember if they ended up in court or however it worked out, but the homeowner agreed to remove all the stuff that was on his property, and it was done. I mean, it needed to go, but anyway.
But you've got zoning in most areas.
Right.
That can take care of that without any legal fight at all. They just send you a notice and a picture of your dryer sitting out in the driveway. And they say, if you don't remove the dryer in 30 days, we're going to have you in court. Well, it's a threat not by a neighbor. It's a threat by the county.
Absolutely.
And most people respect their government a heck of a lot more than they respect the bullies on the local board.
You're absolutely right. But the thing is that the reason we have HOAs is because the local government doesn't really want to deal with all of this stuff. So they just say, go talk to your HOA, which I think is a dereliction of their duty.
I think it is. But here in Colorado, I know of cases where, in fact, in cases involving me, where a zoning department called because the HOA had complained. And I removed what they wanted me to remove. It was better than having a lawsuit, and I certainly respected the judge a heck of a lot more than the board.
Well, you're lucky in that case because I don't think Fairfax will do anything. I mean, I've called them on certain issues and have got absolutely nowhere with
Well, what I've heard from the zoning and from people that call zoning is the noisy complainer gets the fastest action by zoning. So if it's something like a dryer on a driveway and it really is an eyesore, you've got to have a lot of people complaining to zoning. It does work. If you make one call to zoning, yeah, they're not going to listen to you. But if you make a lot of calls, then it'll happen. The dryer will be removed, and there's no lawsuit, and insurance companies don't have to get involved, and these idiot attorneys don't have to make $10,000 apiece for having moved the dryer.
But anyway, going back to the situation when I was on the board.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, they'd given him this list of rules, and he'd agreed, and one of the things was that his car, because he had all this stuff on the driveway, his car was over on the lawn.
Mm-hmm.
Not completely on the lawn, but partially on the lawn. So there was an agreement. He cleaned it up. Everything was going okay. Then the board decided that they got permission from the next-door neighbor. Now, mind you, there were all kinds of bushes and shrubs and things shielding the house. There was no problem with it. It was well-maintained. Everything was okay. But the manager couldn't tell whether a quarter of an inch of the guy's car was off the driveway and on the grass. So the whole board convened, and I said I wasn't going to waste my time with anything that idiotic, but the whole board convened in the neighbor's yard to peer through the bushes to determine whether or not the guy's wheels, tires, were just a quarter of an inch over the driveway and onto the grass. I mean, they go to such extreme lengths. Why waste Saturday morning doing something that stupid?
Now, how do we control that, Shu? How do we stop the outrageousness but still allow the HOAs to deal with major things?
It goes back to what I was saying earlier on. You know, there's no pride. There's no dignity. Anybody with an ounce of pride or dignity would never subject themselves to doing something that stupid.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's just my personal opinion.
Well, so few people try to get on these boards that the only people that turn out or volunteer themselves to be elected are people with power issues, power control issues, personality defects. And that's a problem. You don't see that in congressional records or races or senatorial
races. Oh, yeah, you do.
Well, yeah, you do, but yeah, they're quickly weeded out in the primaries. But
yeah,
you tend to get some pretty good people in the top spot before the election rolls around. And they debate. The public has a chance to see how petty or how silly each candidate is. And it all comes out in the wash. We get better candidates because of our elections. But when you have less than 15 or 20% of the HOA populace turning out to hear the candidates talk, and where all the candidate says as to why he wants to be elected is, well, I've lived in this neighborhood for 15 years, and I love it. It's such a nice place we'd like to protect.
Yeah.
That's what they say to get elected.
That's what they say in your neighborhood, too?
And I wouldn't vote for either one of them. Well, I would end up being one of the one of the people who's deemed not responsible because I haven't taken part in choosing one of the candidates. But they don't give you enough information. They get on these boards by saying absolutely nothing, and then they've got this position of power which they can turn into a lifetime occupation, bullying neighbors around. It's fundamentally wrong, and I've said from the very beginning, the entire structure of HOAs is flawed.
Yeah, I agree with you.
There's no such thing as a good HOA. Every single HOA that you think is good is only one vote from
one
a disaster.
One election away from having everything turned around.
Yes.
Either a board member or a new manager or a new attorney who's going to come in and say, oh, if you don't enforce all of this stuff, they might sue you personally.
Yeah.
And by the way,
attorney makes a lot of money by churning up the works.
By the way, these are my fees. I agree with you. I don't think they work. I haven't seen anything work. I've been doing this for a long time. I've been talking to people. I've attended other people's homeowner meetings. When I started getting involved 20-some years ago, we called them homeowner meetings. So the homeowners came, and when I was on the board, any homeowner who walked in could spend as much time as they wanted to discuss the issues, to discuss problems, to talk about something, to propose ideas, anything they wanted, because twice a month we met.
Mm-hmm.
Twice a month we listened to them. And every month I wrote an article and put it in the newsletter.
Mm-hmm.
And said, you know, here are the issues, here's how I voted, and here's the reason I voted that way. And then they changed it. They're now board meetings, and people have 3 minutes, but you have to sign up, and you have to tell them what you want to talk about. And frankly, I don't do that. So I haven't voted. I haven't been to a meeting. I haven't done anything.
Yeah, well, that's what happens with 80 or 90% of the rest of the neighbors.
Yeah, but then CAI does all these wonderful, I got to tell you this, CAI does all these wonderful surveys, and they find out that something like 80% of the members always vote in every election. But then on the other hand, they're whining because they say if people don't vote and people can't have valid elections, then the whole concept of the HOA is going to collapse. Wouldn't that be terrible?
Our wonderful George Staropoli and fantastic Deborah Goonan of Florida have done guest blogs on neighborsofwar.com talking about how fraudulent these CAI surveys are.
Oh, yeah. I had Deborah come. I asked her to do some research, and I wanted to debunk a lot of the garbage that CAI was putting out. And she did an absolutely incredible job.
Oh, she's one of the best in the country.
She's really, really good.
You
just ask her to do some research, and she'll do it and send it out to you.
By the way, I put out the word to people on the Neighbors of War website to send me video clips of the annual HOA meeting where people are trying to scratch each other's eyes out. I see them occasionally. I want to post them so that folks who are just casually turning into Neighbors at War are seeing the viciousness, the physical violence that goes on inside homeowners association meetings.
There was one out of Florida, and I interviewed the guy, Stephen. I can't think of his last name. Stephen. Yeah, he was.
I think he may be one of those that I posted, where it was a hair pulling contest at the annual meeting.
Yeah, he.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep.
Stephen those Smith.
Are, those are fun.
Stephen Smith.
Mm-hmm.
Right here, and they. Yeah. It's like, wait a minute, guys. What is this?
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
What is it? It's your home.
You live there. Yeah, that's your neighbor.
You know, for centuries, people in Europe and other parts of the world have had multi-unit buildings.
Mm-hmm. And they seem to get along. Isn't that funny?
Well, the thing is, they don't have the governance issues.
Yeah.
They have a manager, and at the annual meeting, the manager is told what the manager is supposed to do, but they don't come and they don't issue you flower pot rules, dress codes, you know, none of that stuff.
Yeah.
You're the boss, you're the homeowner, you're paying their salary.
The word is getting out, though. You know, we started off by talking about the number of people tuning into the Neighbors at War website. We're now well over 500,000 running average over the past year. I don't know what was happening December 1st, but on that one day, December 1st, 17,000 logins.
Wow.
On Neighbors at War.
And
these
this is different people.
Well, you can't tell that. You just know there's 17,000 logins. The other significant thing that we learned was that something like 47,000 pages of Neighbors at War were read by those 17,000 people.
Wow.
So people are going back and reading the history. I'm going back and reading 10 or 15 or 20 different pages of material when they log on, they're discovering that there is a resource out there in onthecommons.com, in Jan Bergerman, in George Storopoly, in Neighbors at War. We've got so many numbers out there of people who are saying, wow, my neighbor told me about this. I'm just looking at it for the first time. This is weird. This is wild.
People don't believe it, you know, and the other thing that I think is very sad, the only thing that's keeping this thing afloat is fear.
Mm-hmm.
People, don't be afraid. A pink flamingo in somebody's yard's not going to devalue your property. For God's sakes, get intelligent.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, stop buying all this nonsense. They'll use anything to scare you to death.
Well, as I say again, this coming financial collapse is going to collapse HOAs all over the country. It's going to happen. There's not an economist, a world economist on the ball who is not predicting the same thing. So this problem may right itself simply by doing away with the institution of HOAs.
How do you figure, how's that going to work? Is that going to collapse housing, or is it going to collapse the HOA?
I'll have a blog here in a couple of nights which explains that specifically. But bottom line is that if you have 10 or 15% of the houses suddenly vacant in an HOA, that has profound implications for the cleanliness of the swimming pool, whether the front entrance is maintained properly. It means massive special assessments against other members of the HOA, many of whom are also going to move out because they can't afford the extra expenses of the special assessments. And that increases the number of foreclosed homes or empty homes. When that happens, you have certain lending agencies like the FHA that are going to come in, and maybe Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac or their replacements, and they'll say, we're not going to lend in a neighborhood that has 15 to 20 to 50% vacancies. Now, all the property values go down because nobody can get loans to buy homes in there. Now you've got a collapsed HOA. It's going to hit them first because you don't find the same problem in the inner city neighborhood when you have 10 or 15% vacancies. It doesn't really impact anyone. The neighborhood generally has a chance of pulling out and coming around as soon as home sales start up again. In an HOA which has been collapsed by those 10 to 15% vacancies, they don't have a chance of coming back unless they fundamentally change their structure. In other words, do away with the HOA.
I think I sort of agree. I agree with you. I think what you're seeing in some parts of the country, notably right where I'm sitting right here, is this notion, and I started to write something about it, and I never did finish it, but this notion that everything has to be a walkable community, a sustainable community. We're shunting people further and further into these urban areas. We don't want the suburbs anymore. We want new urbanism.
Mm-hmm. That is happening. It's happening in Denver. Detroit, of course, is one of the major ones. Many of the yuppies are moving back into downtown Detroit and turning the housing into nice condos.
But even the suburbs here are turning into urban areas. I mean, they're tearing down everything. There's a train station, a metro station. Oh, I'm going to say about half a mile from where I'm sitting right here. Maybe not even a half a mile. And it had a big parking lot where people would go and park, and the parking lot was full because people would drive there, they'd park their cars and commute downtown because there's no parking downtown. I mean, it's impossible. So all of a sudden, the parking lot was gone. They built these garages. In there, they've got a number of enormous, I think they're apartment buildings. You never realized just how much space there was in that parking garage. But now you've got shops, you've got grocery stores, you've got apartment buildings. I mean, we're talking huge, huge apartment buildings. And they want everybody right there. They want people to shop there. They want people to live there. They want people to slide down the railing in the morning and just get on that train and go downtown. Don't want to do anything.
We're seeing a lot of that here.
That's the Urban Land Institute that's doing it, that new urbanism. Andres Duaney, his wife Elizabeth Plater Zybeck, Peter somebody else. I mean, these guys were the ones that started it, and the model child is Celebration Florida, the town that Disney built. And it's been ongoing for, I don't know, about 20 years now. So that's what's happening. They want to take care of you literally from cradle to grave.
Mm-hmm. Now, what are they doing for governance?
Well, they've got HOAs.
HOAs.
I mean, everything is an HOA. Mm-hmm. Everything's an HOA.
The one question I raised recently was, how is it legal? How is it constitutionally permissible for a government entity such as a county or a township? How are they able, when they're required to obey the Constitution, how are they able to reach down and take developers and put them into a quasi-government institution that doesn't respect the U.S. Constitution? How can a government body do something as unconstitutional as that and get away with it now, and have for decades?
They will tell you that it's a contract.
They do that, but that doesn't work if you're saying, no, this government is creating an unconstitutional entity where the 1st, 2nd, 3rd, 4th, 5th, 13th, and 14th Amendment don't apply.
Well, they'll tell you that you don't have to buy in there. You don't have to live there.
No, the point is, in many parts of the country, you don't have a choice.
I understand, and I'm sitting right in one of them. I understand. But they will tell you, you don't have to buy there. You can move out into the country.
But they're still creating a corporation.
They're creating it.
A corporation.
Absolutely.
With mandatory, unconstitutional rules. How can any government body do that legally?
I don't know how. I mean, morally, how can they do it?
I'm not talking morally. I'm talking just basically, fundamentally. I don't see how the city of Denver can say, you are now forced to live in this new building right by the railway, but you don't have First Amendment rights. How can they do that?
They're doing it.
I know they are. Certainly they are. I just wonder if the right argument has not been raised by enough people loud enough.
They had these town hall meetings some years ago when they started to implement this nonsense, this new urbanism nonsense, this walkable communities, this, you know, traffic calming things, and, you know, all of this absolute baloney. And they had all of the proponents of this come and show pretty pictures. And, you know, here's a picture of Paris and here's a picture of London. And you can see how, you know, people live like this. And it's right there. And you go down and you go out and you walk there. And you don't have to get in your car and drive for miles to get to the grocery store or drive for miles to go and pick up your medicines. You can just go down the stairs and under the building and into the building, and isn't it wonderful? And we'll have these little playgrounds here, and you can pick up your laundry on the way to, you know, all of that.
Sir Thomas More's Utopia.
Sir Thomas More's Utopia. So they had these pictures, and they fed people with all of these words, these, you know, that all of this wonderful walkable traffic calming, all of this nonsense. And then they broke us up into groups. And they sent us with a leader. And the leader was going to find out what we wanted. And so we sat around this group, and I'm sitting there thinking, you know, I'm the only one who really understands what's going on in that group. So the guy goes around, he says, what would you like? And, oh, I'd like to be able to walk to the library. Okay, and what would you like?
Oh, I don't want to get in my car to buy groceries.
I want to park. I want, you know, all of the stuff that they were fed. So he gets to me and he says, what about you? One word. I said, dignity. He turns around, he starts to write dignity, and he stops. And he turns around, looks at me, really puzzled. Dignity? He's thinking, did we use that word? No. Where did the... And I said, uh-huh. So he goes back and dignity again? And I said, yeah. So anyway, we won the whole thing. He came back afterwards, and he came back and asked me, what did you mean by that? What did I mean by living with dignity? I mean, come on. What did I mean by it?
Now, what's funny is that dignity, or that utopia, most people don't realize was written as a farce by Sir Thomas More. It wasn't a real workable island. It was a complete farce. But you go back and look at the two famous times in world history where we tried to create a utopia. And one was the early adherence to the Christian church when they tried to set up the socialist society. It didn't work. It had to be ended. Same thing happened when the... first Americans came over here and tried to set up their Plymouth Rock colonies. Everybody was going to eat equally. Well, that meant a lot of people weren't growing food. And the whole colony collapsed because they were essentially setting up a socialist utopia. It didn't work.
The tragedy of the commons.
Mm-hmm.
The tragedy of the commons,
yes. That's a good book title for somebody.
Yeah, well, yeah. It certainly is. We're coming close to the end of the show after a few jigs and jags, but we got it done.
You're great, Shu. I love you. You know that.
Well, I love you too, and I love the idea that you've got that website and that you've written the book. And let's give people the title of your book and the address, the URL for your website.
Get on Amazon and buy as a Christmas present for people that you want to get educated, Neighbors at War, The Creepy Case Against Your Homeowners Association by Ward Lucas. Or if you want it autographed, you can contact me directly on the website, and I'll work it out one way or the other to get an autographed copy to you for the same price that Amazon is selling it. That's around, I don't know, $20-$25.
But you also now have the Kindle version.
The Kindle version is available, too. And that's also from Amazon, and that's under $10.
Hey, guys. Cheapest chips.
Good Christmas present.
Cheapest chips. Give us your URL.
Okay. It's neighborsatwar.com.
Neighborsatwar.com. Now, if you have a problem, an HOA problem, you want to send it to Ward, because he's collecting them for his next book, right, Ward?
Well, you know what? Here's another thing that I want to get out to people if we have a few seconds left.
Yeah.
The resources on Neighbors at War from all of these experts around the country, just print off these pages and write your own book. Don't worry about copyrights. We're copyrighted, but we're not going to dispute somebody taking our research and writing their own book. If we had 100 new books written with all of the materials available on Neighbors at War, all those books would look different. They'd have a different viewpoint, a different tone, but every single one of those books would contribute to the body of knowledge that we're trying to get out to the people.
And number one, you tell everyone that it doesn't work. There's no way you can tweak it, fix it, and make it a friendly, homeowner-friendly place to live, right?
Amen to that.
Amen to that. Ward, thank you so much.
Thanks, you.
Please check out our website at onthecommons.us. On the Commons is produced by OTC Multimedia Productions.
Well, I finally bought my dream home to enjoy retirement life. I've made new friends and buddies, lots of parties for my wife. It seemed that life was perfect, all my neighbors felt the same. Then along came death by CCRs, life's over, I'm fair game. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Now there's lots of open meetings close to Justice 4HO. Those arrogant board members say what they want you to know. The CAI and ULI will help you lose it all. But I wouldn't sell that dream home yet, the writing's on the wall. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Well, we're not afraid or stupid, all your threats mean nothing here. Time marches on, soon you'll be gone, united we'll be there. So put your rules and CCRs up where the sun don't shine, and enjoy those precious golden years, stop messing around with mine. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell.